No, just, yeah, there we go. You got your dial locked on 23FM, your non-stop, one-stop shop of... Okay, so what I'm doing now is there's a prize for the first person. I've already got a Minecraft server up and running in Azure. That's the IP address. First person to connect. I'm just going to switch across to my Minecraft client. How many people do that in the middle of a tech ed presentation? And I will see the first person to actually log on. Anybody got a Minecraft client? First person to log on gets the book. Oh, sorry, I'll bring back up the IP address. 138-91-136-171. Anybody in the process of making a connection? Pardon? It's not bloody RDP, it's...
No, you don't get it. We've got mobile devices. We're remoting into our desktop.
But you're not carrying your Minecraft with you?
Give me a second for the update.
It's still open, guys. It's up on the big screen. Oh, there we go. Chris Fowles, come on down. So I thought I would start, as I've just done, by showing you that this actually works. Now, the idea for this session, I was actually out with some friends from Google who are working Google infrastructure, and they were talking about how, at school, their kids were all playing Minecraft. And that their kids wanted to be able to play Minecraft with one another, but that really you don't want to let 10, 11-year-olds start mucking around on public servers where you've got no control over it. And one of them figured, well, why not actually, I'll just disconnect, you are welcome to stay on that server and play during the session. I'm not going to do anything with that. That's part of a Windows Azure trial subscription. The book I just gave you is my Server 2012 administering book for Microsoft Learning. So please write a review if you actually get around to looking at it and maybe using it for a certification. But it's also got a lot of how to actually do stuff. It's a lot of labs on how to do stuff in Server 2012. So what's happened is that these guys actually had their kids figure out public cloud because they wanted to go and run Minecraft. Rather than mucking around with ADSL connections or cable connections, kids age 10 have figured out how to do this. So I was talking to Andrew McMurray, who's the sort of the cloud evangelist for Australia and New Zealand, and I said, why don't we do a session about this? Why don't we actually introduce Windows Azure, but do it in a fun way? Because at a lot of these conferences, you see Windows Azure go up on the screen and you're thinking, I have no idea how I can use that in my environment. The idea of this session is I'm going to show you a fun way to do it. I'll give you a reason to actually spin up your own Windows Azure trial, and that by playing with it, just as you played with networking, you'll learn perhaps what you can do with it and start thinking about ways you can do it yourself. Oh, so why Minecraft on Azure? Simply because it's a fun workload. The other thing, and the other good thing doing it here, is it also shows that you can use Java and a non-Microsoft application in a Microsoft public cloud, that you are able to spin up a workload that in that way. I'm going to be putting in a few of these silly pictures as I go along. There's a lot of Minecraft memes on the internet. Why Minecraft on Azure? Now, many IT... Who here has actually spun up a Windows Azure subscription? Okay, so there's one or two. Who here's actually really played with it? Okay, one. And that's the thing. Why would you go and play with it if you haven't got a workload to run on it? Who here's got kids? Who here's got kids that play Minecraft? Exactly. My 10-year-old... Pardon? Well, that's a given, but it's more that our kids are wanting to play with other kids on servers, and that can be a bit of a hassle for us. Windows Azure certainly gives us a way to do that, and as I go through the session, I'll actually talk about, okay, here's a way to make our server public, but we can also talk about using VPNs with Windows Azure, so your kid can send another kid a client that they run, and then they've got it so that it looks like the Azure server's on their local area network, but they're VPN'd into it. So the only people that can actually then go and hit that server are people that have the VPN client. So you can actually really, really lock it down, because the last thing you want, it's like I let my son on Skype, and then at 3 in the morning, he started getting connection requests from people all around the world, and I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? I mean, obviously, you know, it's Skype, it's fairly public, but I had to go and then lock down all these settings because kids at school use Skype to talk to one another after school, even when they're in primary school. So the Minecraft requires Java and a Minecraft server, so it's not like, oh, look, I've gone and deployed this Microsoft workload here. I'm deploying a really non-traditional workload. So what will you learn in this session? Looks like you're trying to play Minecraft. You'll learn up how to sign up. You'll learn what you'll get in your Windows Azure trial, how to spin up VMs from the gallery, how to create images in the gallery. So that's the other thing we're going to do. We're not only going to deploy Minecraft on Windows Azure, we're actually going to create a gallery VM so that at any time when you want to spin up a new Minecraft server, it's a matter of click, 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 deploy. Talk about setting up endpoints, which allows traffic in from the internet. We'll also talk about configuring VPNs. And we'll look at a bit of monitoring so that you can ensure that you don't go over your monthly allocation with Windows Azure. Here's your periodic table of Minecraft. Okay, so signing up for a Windows Azure trial subscription. What you need to do this is you need a credit card. Now, you don't need a credit card that's going to be charged. You need credit card for the purposes of identification. If you think about what Microsoft's doing is giving you cloud capacity. If you're a really clever hacker and you wanted to go and do some cracking of stuff, you would just spin up many, 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 many trial subscriptions. Suddenly, you've got an insane amount of compute, and you'd go and use that to attack your target. So why bother infecting computers with a botnet when Microsoft's going to give you all of these free compute resources through Azure? So what happens is that you need a credit card to prove the uniqueness of your subscription. You're not going to be charged for it. The moment, if you used all of your capacity in your subscription, what actually happens is that your subscription simply shuts down. So even though you've given them your credit card, you're never going to be charged for it unless you've come through and given them explicit permission. So rather than actually type my credit card up on the screen, which I'm sure you know would be a wonderful security measure in front of all of you, I've got a short minute-long video just showing what it's like signing up. So here, what I've done is I've gone to the Windows Azure portal. What I need to do is give them my first name, Oren, last name, Thomas, country, my mobile phone, because what it'll do is it'll send me a text message to authenticate myself. Again, because why bother with a botnet if you can spin up all of these cloud instances? So I do that. I send myself a text message. When I have sent myself the text message, what it'll do is it will then be authenticated against my phone. So it's just, it's an identification project. So once I send the text message, it says, go and put your code in. I go and put the code in that comes from my phone. So once I've done that, I then enter my credit card information, which I have quite obviously not going to display in front of you guys, or my phone number, as much as I would love you all ringing me. So I click agree, and that's it. That is signing up to a Windows Azure trial subscription. So very simple to do. Yes, you can. So I have used the same credit card and the same mobile phone, and I have had so far 5 Windows Azure trial subscriptions. I also have a subscription through MSDN. So MSDN gives you one, but when I'm doing stuff like this, or I've just for Trainsignal/Pluralsight done a Windows Azure IaaS course, which is basically a 6-hour course taking you through every aspect, and that's going to be published by Trainsignal/Pluralsight, because Pluralsight just bought out Trainsignal, in the next month or so. And that's just basically a very introductory, quick, easy way of getting into Windows Azure. No idea. So is it Blizzard? I didn't know it was Blizzard, but there you go. I imagine that they're very good at sending out those sort of messages. I think eventually you can use it. You can lock down your Windows Azure subscription and get it so that you, when you log in, you can have an authenticator app. But I was recently writing the update for the Config Manager course for Microsoft Learning, and in that, we actually get people to spin up a temporary subscription, and we go all the way through how you do that with a fake Microsoft account, and there's a fake Microsoft credit card number that we can use for that because Microsoft's given it to us. And it's all very simple. You can really, as long as you've got that one credit card number in your mobile phone, you can set up a fake live account. But the trick is you need to use a different live account each time. So you can't use the same live account to recreate the subscription. But given it takes you 3 seconds to create a new Windows Live account, it's not a problem. You know, just orin.thomas3@outlook.com. So what do you get? Well, with a free subscription, you get $200 of Windows Azure, $200 worth. Now, that's actually fairly discounted. But to give you an idea what $200 looks like, that Minecraft server that I'm running that at 7 gig of RAM with multiple cores. I'll show you how I set it up a little later. And that's costing me about 50 or 60 cents a day to run that continuously. So if you're thinking about letting your kids play with it, what you do is you just spin. If you've got Windows Azure virtual machines turned off, you're not being charged for them. So obviously on a $200 free subscription, you don't care because it expires at the end of the month. But if you actually came in and were paying for it yourself, you can do a pay-as-you-go, and you might only be paying a couple of dollars a month if you've only got those servers, say, active on the weekends or when your kids come to you and say, hey, can we have a server? Yep, bang, here's the IP address. So that's one of those interesting little metaphysical things about Minecraft, isn't it? Spinning up a new VM. So what I'm going to show you now is enough of slides. Let's get into some demo. So what I am here, I'm in, and this is just monitoring that Minecraft server as it's running there. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go and create a new Minecraft server from scratch. So this is the Windows Azure console. The first thing I'm going to do is I am going to create a Server 2012 VM. So I say go and create me a virtual machine from the gallery. It gives me my image selection. Now, because R2's in preview, it doesn't sysprep that well. And what I want here is I want a machine that I can sysprep after I've installed Java and the Minecraft server. Because what I want to do is create it as a gallery VM so that I can then spin up instances of it whenever I want. I can obviously have it there, but let's say I wanted to have a second server or a third server or a fourth server. If I put it in the gallery, I've instantly got a template that I can work from. So here I'm just going to go with Server 2012 Data Center. The nice thing about Azure is that all of the licensing for those server operating systems is already included in your subscription. So it's not that I have to go and give it another product key or anything like that. So here I've got my version release date. Now the way that Azure works is it goes for the last 2 previous patch versions. So when I'm spinning up a machine, it's already up to date in terms of software updates. The key to managing updates in Azure is knowing that once you spin it up from the gallery, you're responsible for updating it. But until you spin it up, The moment you spin something up from the gallery, unless it's a custom image of yours, Microsoft will keep it right up to date. So this Server 2012 instance is going to be right up to date. So I need to give it a virtual machine name. That needs to be unique across all of Azure. A 15-character name that needs to be unique. That's actually a lot easier than you'd think it'd be. So I'll just go Oren Minecraft, and I'll say 5. Here I specify what resources I want to throw at it. Now, the way to understand this is you've obviously got extra small, small, medium, large, extra large. And then they start on A6, A7. And the reason that they've gone A6, A7 is that then they can go A8, A9, A10, and they can just, because obviously what's counting as extra large today in 3 years' time is going to seem dinky and small. So you choose how much resources you want to throw at it. So I can say, hey, do 4 cores, give me 7 gig of memory. When you choose a username, you cannot choose root, you cannot choose administrator. So you have to give it a local account name for your local admin account on the server that you're going to RDP to and set it up. So I like to use Chancellor because it gives that impression of administration without being administrator. And then you enter your administrator password twice. So the next bit, you don't have to worry about too much at this level of just mucking around with it. All you're doing is you're saying, do you want a cloud service? Now, cloud service, that's only if you're doing multiple tier applications. Otherwise, you just go with the default. What cloud service DNS name? That's just going to take it from the name I gave it. Do I want to throw it into a particular affinity group? That just means, do I want to keep it in the same area in the data center? I don't care. Do I want to have an automatically generated storage account? I'm fine with that. That's for billing when you want to go back and look later at how much you're being charged for storage. Do I want to make it highly available? No, it's a Minecraft server. I don't really care. So here I've got endpoint configuration. So I'm not going to do that now, but this is where I configure what can come in from the internet to actually talk to my Windows Azure virtual machine. So you can see here by default, they allow remote desktop and PowerShell. And you'll also see that remote desktop is on a non-standard port. And that's simply a protection mechanism. So I click OK, and what it does is it goes off and it starts spinning up that Windows Server 2012 machine. Now, this will take about 3 or 4 minutes. So I'll just quickly jump back to Minecraft. See if anybody's actually still on there. We've got 2 of you. If both of you want to email, both of you want to email me, I will send you a link to my book. My email address is orindlt@hotmail.com. So if you send me an email, I will send you a PDF of the Windows Server 2012 administration book. Okay, so we still wait for that to provision. Unfortunately, that is something that takes a little time to do. And you can come into the dashboard here and monitor it, monitor the configuration. So while that's doing that, should have gone go from current slide. Any of us ever done that? So endpoints and connectivity. The idea behind an endpoint is that the default Minecraft port is 25565. So when you're going to go and deploy Minecraft to Windows Azure, unless you've decided to run Minecraft on an alternate port, you need to configure it an endpoint to use 25565. So the way that we do that is we come back into our Windows Azure console, and even though that machine is spinning up, I can go across here to endpoints. I can't do anything about that yet, so I have to wait. But if I come back here and show you that running VM, we've got endpoints here, and you can see I've got my Minecraft endpoint. So waiting. Any of us done this? It's Lego for adults. So, adding a virtual machine to the gallery is simply a matter of sysprepping it. If you sysprep the virtual machine and then generalize it, you can go and add it to the gallery. So the reason that you would do this is, if you've got a bunch of standardized workloads in Windows Azure, you would want to, instead of constantly going installing them, what you want to do is you want to go and have a bunch of sysprepped virtual machines. If you've got Virtual Machine Manager and System Center App Controller, what you can do is you can configure them into your Windows Azure subscription so that you can manage your Windows Azure subscription and migrate stuff in and out of the cloud. So the other concepts that you need to be aware of with Windows Azure, although not just for Minecraft, is the idea of networks. So what happens is you can see here, this is, actually that shouldn't be there, but I'll do a reset, see if it goes away. Okay, so virtual networks, what a virtual network does is it allows you to define which internal IP addresses your Windows Azure virtual machines are going to use. So what happens when I just spin up a virtual machine without doing anything is that Microsoft assigns it an internal IP address and an external IP address. And the way that this works is as long as the virtual machine is allocated, which means it's actually attracting charges, it will retain the same public IP address and the same private IP address. If I deallocate it, it won't be attracting charges, but it won't keep that public or that private IP address. So if I create a virtual network, what happens is I have much more control over the allocation of the private IP address, not so much the public. So the reason you would want to go and create an internal virtual network is that then allows you to go and create VPNs through Windows Azure into that virtual network. And you can create what's called a site-to-site VPN or a point-to-site VPN. So if you were spinning this up for your kids, you'd go and create what's called a point-to-site VPN, which is where you give everybody a client, and that allows them to go and connect to that virtual network on an individual basis. A site-to-site VPN is where you've got your router, and you're allowing your router to connect in to that network. So back here, so it's still provision. Was there a question? No, okay. So while that's still provisioning in progress, now the way that you connect to a virtual machine is you do it through remote desktop. So if I go back to here, if I come back to Minecraft 3, so this is the Minecraft server that's actually already running. So if I click connect here, what it'll do is it'll throw an RDP file at me. So if I click open, it will make a remote connection. So we know that I like to use Chancellor. Yeah, and spell it correctly. Get my warning. And when I make a connection to that, all it looks like is an absolutely bog-standard server 2012 R2 computer. So I log in, and that's just, you can see there I'm running Minecraft. The way I'm running Minecraft on this server, I can see here that Chris has joined the game, other people have come in and left. And you can run Minecraft just by double-clicking here on the executable. But the way I like to do it when it's running in Azure is I like to use this little script that allows me to get Minecraft to actually allocate a lot more memory than it would normally use. So normally it uses about a gig of memory, which means that if you've got a lot of people connecting at once, you might start to slow the server down. That particular script, and you can find, if you just search for setup Minecraft, I'll paste it back into a slide so you can see it a bit bigger. That will, the one I've got here, is actually running Minecraft with 5 gigs. So that server there runs with 7 gig of RAM. If I copy that out, let's... There you go. So there it is there. And just make sure that when you do that, you have the right version of the executable. So as that updates, that obviously changes. And that just tells Java to go and allocate 5 gig to Minecraft, which then allows Minecraft to run a lot more nicely. So let's go back here. And hopefully we've now got our brand new machine running. Okay, so Oren Minecraft 5. I come in here to the dashboard. So what I'll do is I'll get rid of this one here. This is our existing one because we're going to be setting it up from scratch. I click connect, and I'm going to get the same stuff. So I click open, connect, use another account, Chancellor, sign in. So the first thing I need to do once I've signed in and got a connection, there's a couple of things I need to do. I need to configure the firewall to allow Minecraft traffic, but that's more after Minecraft's been installed. The first thing I really need to do is go across to Larry Ellison and get myself a copy of Java. So when you do this, so this is an absolutely brand new server. It's the first time that this server's booted. It's the first time anybody's actually signed onto it. It's a good thing there's no creepers here, it's quite dark. Think geek, for all of those things that you don't want to tell your wife about. So if we go into Task Manager, more details, and then go across to Performance, what we can actually see is we can see what we've actually got on this particular server itself, and you can see that we've got the 7 gig of RAM. So the first thing you need to do if you're going to go out and pull information down to Server 2012, oopsie-daisy. Is turn off Internet Explorer enhanced security configuration, because everybody knows how much fun that is when we run it for the first time. Wake up, Jeff. So we come in here, we've got IE enhanced security configuration. Again, it's still spinning up for the first time. Turn off that for administrators. Now that I've done that, I can go and get the two things I need to go and get. First one is Java, pardon?
Chrome,
yes, very funny. Now, the other nice thing about Windows Azure virtual machines is they automatically have a connection to the internet, which means, like the other day, Rick, who's in the other room, wanted to go and order something from Amazon in the US, and he kept getting geolocated back to Australia. All he did is he spun up an Azure virtual machine, and suddenly he was geolocated in the United States. So, and I have heard of people that may have used particular torrent and things like that from perhaps Windows Azure, because you do not pay for data going into Windows Azure, you only pay for data going out. So here, What I'm doing is I've gone into other Java downloads and I'm pulling the 64-bit Windows Offline installer. So what I'll do is I'll go and save that on the desktop. Now, Windows Azure, you can also upload your own sysprepped VHD. So in the gallery, there is all of those server operating systems, but you could go and sysprep your own Windows client operating system, and as long as you've licensed it, because you won't get the automatic license, you could actually run it up in Windows Azure as well. But gaming performance would be rubbish. So here, this will go and install Java. Straightforward. It's just like doing it on any other virtual machine. And that's the trick that a lot of people haven't got to with Windows Azure. When Windows Azure came out, we had SQL Azure, and that was a SQL database in the cloud. And then we've got Exchange Online. And a lot of administrators who sort of kicked the tires a year or two ago went, well, I don't see how I can use this because I can't go and push the bits. I can't go and pull it apart. But when we're running it actually as virtual machines, suddenly this makes a lot more sense to us as systems administrators because we can understand all of the possibilities of what we can do with virtual machines as it. That is, that infrastructure as a service makes a lot more sense to an IT pro than sort of platform as a service, because platform as a service, someone else is managing it, or software as a service such as SQL. Like, we understand SQL Azure, great, you can go and run a SQL server in the cloud, but I can't manage the server that hosts it. So the idea here is you can manage the server completely. So we've installed Java. The next thing to do is go to Minecraft, minecraft.net, and downloads. Oh, nice. So I'll just log in. I'll log in with my son's account. There's an interesting thing they tell presenters is that they say make sure whenever you're logging into something, they tell you to be very careful. Is it download? Yeah, sorry. They tell you to be very careful about typing things in because all the sessions are recording. And what's happened is that people have gone back and looked at the recordings, have gone and picked up presenters' passwords, and then used them. So let's take Minecraft Server 1.6.2. Let's go and save that. So that's downloaded. Let's go and run it. Actually, it's usually better with the Minecraft server to go and create a little folder for it. So what we'll do is we'll actually create one off the root of C. Now, with Windows Azure Virtual Machines, you'll see that there's this temporary storage disk. Never put anything there. Anything there is, by its nature, temporary and will get blown away whenever the machine restarts or is moved or is, yeah. So what I'll do is I'll go and create a little folder here called Minecraft. I'll take this here, go and put it in the Minecraft folder. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to do, rather than faff about too much with ports, what I'm just going to do is actually turn off Windows Firewall. Now, that would sound completely insane, except for the fact that nothing can actually get through unless I've got an endpoint. So normally I'd just say go and configure the proper rules, but because I'm sitting here doing a demo and I don't want to be here forever because we've already got to wait for these damn things to spin up. It's obviously not going to be domain profile, but I'm just being paranoid. I've got all of that, so I've just turned off the firewall. So the next thing I need to do is come back to the Windows Azure console before I even fire that up. Go configure. Now, if you remember from our PowerPoint slide, our endpoint is 25565. So I come back into the Windows Azure console and I go, give me a new endpoint at a standalone endpoint. I'll call it Minecraft. It's TCP 25565. Private port is 25565. So that's just basically doing port forwarding. I create that. It'll go in and it'll reconfigure the network. Again, that takes about 30 seconds or so. So while that's doing that, what I'm going to do here is jump back into the server. So the trick is with Minecraft server, those of you who have done it, you run it once, you stop it, and then you allow it to do it again. So sometimes it doesn't necessarily generate everything it needs to do. So you see, okay, so I've just stopped that. Why aren't you going away? Oh, there we go. Okay, so now if I come back to it, it'll start up a lot faster. It'll have generated everything it needs to do. So the next step is for everybody that's got their Minecraft client. That's still configuring the endpoint, so we have to wait a little bit for that. If I go to the dashboard here on this particular server, what I can do is I can see what the public virtual IP address is. So this is one is going to be assigned something different. So I'll just copy that and I'll paste it so everybody can see it. He says. So 138.91.139.233. So again, come back to check that that endpoint's been configured. Still going. Now, unfortunately, endpoints are one thing that doesn't get saved when you do the sysprep it and put it to the gallery. All of the other settings will be. So the firewall settings, the location of the Minecraft executable and everything like that will also be saved in that manner. So we're just waiting. That's the problem with doing Windows Azure demos, is that you're waiting for this to spin up. Now, in a production environment, you wouldn't care as much about the speed of this. When you're trying to compress everything into a 60-minute demonstration, it becomes more of an issue. The warning sign here is just telling me it looks like your free trial subscription's about to end. So thanks, don't tell me again. From Windows Azure, from the all items, you can see everything that's going on. And you can see here that we've got the virtual machine Minecraft 5 running, but that it's being modified. So, and you can also come down to the virtual machine part here.
What happens at the end of the 30-day?
Basically, everything gets deleted. So what happens is you get the option of going in and saying, go and start charging me for it, and then you choose a payment plan. So you've got three payment plans. The first payment plan is pay-as-you-go. That's the most expensive, but you have no ongoing commitment. You basically get billed at the end of the month, and then that gets debited from your nominated account. And you can go in, and you can see here, I've got credit status. So I started off, and I've got $138 still. And I've been playing around with this for a month, and you can still see that of the $200, I've still got $138. So I can click here and go view more details, and what that'll actually do is it'll actually log into my billing and show me how I've been billed for. Yeah, so you can actually get a really good amount of telemetry on how much this is costing you. And it says, okay, this is how much you've got left. This is how much data you've pulled in. This is how much data you've transferred out. So you see I've pulled in, you know, half a gig. I've been charged nothing for it. I've transferred 17 gig out, and I've been charged $2.14 for it. I've used these database units. And of compute, that's one VM, I've used 703 hours of compute resources, but I'm still being charged less than $50 across that subscription. So that should give you a very, well, you say $70 for 700 hours. So every 10 hours of compute is costing me a certain amount. So you can get a very good idea about how much this is actually going to cost you. So I'll just jump back to the console. The trick is, as I said, make sure if you shut down the VM within the VM itself, that will not deallocate it and you'll be still charged, but at a lesser rate. If you want absolutely no charge whatsoever, you actually have to deallocate it. But the charges are so minimal that with a shutdown virtual machine, you're literally only paying a couple of cents a day to keep it so that you keep the same virtual IP address. As long as you don't deallocate it, you will actually keep the same public and private IP address. So let's go back across to Minecraft 5. If it's shut down and allocated, yes, you charge for storage. If you deallocate it, you're not charged for storage. So the trick is you can have 500 virtual machines there. As long as you deallocate them, you're not charged for storage. So if you go and put them in the gallery and then you only spin them up when you need them, you're only going to be charged. So if you've got a pay-as-you-go subscription, then it's like, oh, the kids want to go and play. I'll spin up a Minecraft server. I can do that in 2 or 3 minutes. They can go and play, and then I can blow it away when it's finished. So now that that endpoint has been created, let's go back to that IP address. Go disconnect, multiplayer, direct connect. It connects to the server, and lo and behold, I'm on a new Minecraft server. And there's already two of you there. So that's how easy it is to go and deploy Minecraft on Windows Azure. So, oh, hello. Come at me, bro. So now that I've built that Minecraft server, if I want to go and add it to the gallery, what I do is I go and sysprep it. And the way I do that, so sorry for the guys that are actually on the server, but I'm just going to blow the server away. Because sysprepping a server obviously destroys it. So I'm going to run this as an administrator. So cd Windows, cd System32, cd sysprep. Sysprep.exe, and then here I say go and generalize it and then shut it down. So I do that, and what it'll do is it's going to go sysprep the machine, look at everything, and then generalize it. So we've all done this with other operating systems. In a second, I'm going to be disconnected from that. And once I'm disconnected, what I need to do is then deallocate it, and then I can capture it and copy it to the gallery. So just waiting for all of that to happen. The other Minecraft server, of course, is still there. So you could do a Counter-Strike server. I just did Minecraft because, you know, Counter-Strike's a couple of years old, and there seems to be more Minecraft geeks around at the moment than Counter-Strike geeks. So. And there's certainly a lot more, you know, Minecraft memes. But anything that you can run in a server, you can go and run in Azure. And it simplifies the process of, oh, gosh, I don't have to worry about configuring forwarders and port forwarders and wondering whether Optus or Telstra is going to go and allow me to run a server on my network. You don't care. You just spin the server up in Azure. You do what you want with it. You either shut it down or you just blow it away because they become functionally disposable servers. You never need to worry about worrying about licensing. It's all licensed for you. Someone drowned. You're trying to kill one another. How wonderful. And you see the memory usage there. That one, I hadn't gone and run that nice little script, so the memory had been a little later there. So while we wait for that to happen, When you generalize it, what it does is it goes and puts it in the gallery. So let's assume, I'll wait for that to shut down, but I'll show you sort of the end point and then come back to the sort of the forward point. So now if I go new, I've actually, of course, you know, prepared one earlier. Virtual machine from gallery. And what I can do is I can go to my images, and what you see there is I've got a Minecraft server already as a basic image installed in the gallery. So I can just go and deploy this and then say, you know, Oren Minecraft 7. I can then go to also allocate it. So say, give me 7 gig of memory, username. Everything's checking out there. Click OK. So now, while that other one is sysprepping, I'm already spinning up a third Minecraft server there from the gallery. So if I come back to here, remote desktop services has ended. So that was Minecraft 3. So what I do here is I click shut down, and shutting down the virtual machine deprovisions it. It removes its virtual IP address. It deallocates it. So when it's in a shutdown state, as you can see, it's shutting down now. What it does is it takes it offline. I stop being charged for that. And once that's in a completely shutdown state, again, these things don't happen instantly. Here's a fun fact for you. Windows Azure, Microsoft is now running more than a million hardware servers for Windows Azure. So when you're thinking about how Windows Azure runs and how Windows Server 2012 runs and 2012 R2 runs, when they're talking about the cloud OS, it's not just a bunch of marketing rubbish. What's actually happening now is that they're putting stuff in these massive Windows Azure data centers. They're getting it right there, and then they're releasing it commercially. So instead of it going sort of coming up from the commercial market into Windows Azure, what's happening is the innovations are being done there and tested there and worked on those workloads, and then they're being given down. So when you're looking at Windows Server 2012 R2, what you're looking at is technology that's been used and abused up in Windows Azure under extreme load. So of course it's going to work on a much more normal load. So still stopping here. Pardon? It depends what you allocate to it. So the more resources you allocate, the better performance you're going to get. So it's essentially tiered performance. If you basically go and tell it, I don't want to expand. So there's an option that you can go and do within Windows Azure, which is a basically scale out. And when it scales out, it basically moves it around so that you're getting all the resources you want under the proviso that you're going to be paying for it. When you're doing one of these trials, they do tend to sort of limit you in terms of what it's going to do, just so you don't blow out your trial in sort of a couple of minutes by, you know, scaling out to an insane number of processors and an insane sort of I/O. So a trial's probably not the best way to go and look at that, but always be aware that if you're starting to do some really crazy numbers, then you're going to be paying crazy rates for it. But the server hardware is certainly there. And the way you'll have seen it within Virtual Machine Manager, Virtual Machine Manager knows how to do intelligent placement of virtual machines. And it knows that if there's one machine that's spinning up and really starting to use resources, it starts to move other virtual machines off it. And that's what happens in the Windows Azure data center. As you start to require more and more and more compute, more and more and more I/O, other virtual machines will be just pushed out of the way because Microsoft's assumption is, hey, look, if you want to pay for it, we're very happy to go and bill you for it. Okay, so we see that that's now stopped. It says deallocated. So that here. So what I do here is I click capture, and it says, right, what do you want to call the virtual machine image? So Minecraft template. It asks me, have I run sysprep on the machine? I say yes. Now, the original virtual machine will be deleted once the image is captured, so I click OK. and it goes through and it goes and does all of that capturing. So once that's fully captured, that new image becomes available in the gallery. Now, the trick with setting up virtual private networks is you've got to set up a virtual network. And when you create the virtual network, you enable it for VPNs. And it'll basically say, go and give me a gateway certificate. Now, there's a utility called MakeCert that you can download from Microsoft's website that allows you to create self-signed certificates. And you use that to create a VPN root certificate. And then you use the VPN root certificate to create your VPN client certificates. It's only a two-step process. The only reason I'm not showing you is it takes half an hour because you upload your VPN root certificate, and then Windows Azure goes off and builds you VPN client software that will use certificates that trust that root certificate. So then you just download the executable and install it on as many machines as you want. And when you run that, as long as they've got a certificate that trusts that, you can make a VPN connection into Windows Azure. So that's gone and done that. So we just saw... it's still registering. And if we go back to our... we can see that our virtual machine, Minecraft template, and we've also got that new machine, Minecraft 7, which we spun up from the gallery that has Minecraft on it already. But if we went to the new gallery, new virtual machine from gallery, what we would see here is my images. Oh, we'll just wait a sec for that then. Wait. Come on. Successfully captured image. Great. So now that it's successfully captured, new virtual machine from gallery, my images, and we see now that I've got my new Minecraft template virtual machine. Okay, that's mostly what I wanted to show you. Has anybody got any questions? Yes, there is. So let me show you that. Okay, so there is a DNS. Now, the trick is you can, of course, if you've got your own DNS, you can actually run a DNS server in Azure and point people at that if you want. So let's look at, go to virtual machines here. We've got Minecraft 3, which is running. So if I go in here to the dashboard, what I can see here is the DNS name is orindlt minecraft3.cloudapp.net. So it'll be .cloudapp.net, but whatever name you give it, and that's why I said it had to be unique across Azure, that will be the DNS name as well. Yes, it uses dynamic DNS and works that way. Any other questions? Yep.
Can you upload your own VM images to Azure?
Yes, you can. So what you do is that what you configure what's called a management certificate, and then you can install PowerShell. And there's a PowerShell command called upload virtual hard disk. The trick is it's got to be right now, it's got to be in VHD format. It will automatically convert it to fixed and it can't be more than 127 gig in size. In the next iteration of Azure, that's going to go to VHDX and then suddenly you lose that 127 gig limitation. So you can do it in a couple of ways. You can go and upload a sysprepped VHD if you've got an operating system on it. You can also create a VHD that's running Linux and upload it that way, or you can attach VHDs. So you can go and put all of your software that you want to deploy, and it'll go and create that. But what it'll do is when you upload it, every time you want to connect to it, it'll create and spawn a new copy of that virtual hard disk. So you go and put all of your software and junk that you want to install on your VMs for rapid provisioning, and you can just connect that to any VM while it's running. Other questions? Yep. No, you can't pause it. No. So basically once it's run out, but it's as long as you are happy creating new Windows Live accounts, it's you just can make it fairly continuous. I mean, you lose what you had there, but you get to the stage where you start to consider the virtual machines quite disposable. So you don't worry about, oh, well, I don't have continuity with that. The other thing you can do is you can download any virtual machine that's not running. So you can upload your VHDs and you can download your VHDs as well. And because they're already running in Hyper-V on Azure, they'll run on Hyper-V on your local infrastructure as well. Okay, that will be a bit more complicated in terms of the licensing because you probably shouldn't be pulling... Microsoft, I think, at that point is assuming that you are licensing it properly. But yes, you could go and activate a VM down there and then pull it down there and it'll retain its activation status, unless it detects a processor change or something like that, and that's where it might start to arc up. Yep.
So with the DNS name, that'll resolve to a public IP address.
Yes.
Is there anything stopping you taking that IP address and creating your own DNS
name? Not a thing. No, because all you're doing with DNS is you're basically creating an alias record. So you go and create an alias record that points at that, and if you do that, if you shut the virtual machine down, deallocate it, and then bring it back up, the host will change because... So you can do it that way as well.
Will the actual static IP address itself ever change?
Only if you deallocate the virtual machine. So as long as you've got the virtual machine running and you're paying for it, you will keep that static IP address. It's only if you shut it, you shut down the OS and then shut it down itself, it will release back into Azure's pool. And the IP address that you'll be allocated will depend on the region that you are using. Any other questions? Yes?
What's the hardware that Azure runs on the back end?
Okay, so basically it's Microsoft designed, I believe it's, don't quote me on this, I believe it's highly modified Dell kit. So it's basically just, I mean, they buy tens of thousands of servers a year. And as I said, there's a million sitting there. The only other people that I know that are running at that scale is someone like Google. And Google do the same sort of stuff. They just go and Microsoft, you know, you've heard about the containers, but the data centers themselves, there's one going in Sydney and one going in, well, they're already there. They will be active as of next year. So you'll be able to store all your data locally. At the moment, go and use West US because that's the one we've got best connectivity to. But at the moment Sydney and Melbourne come online, those are the ones you want to use. No, they're not making a big noise about it. One of their security is that there's a bit of security by obscurity, but basically what it'll be is you can go and see some pictures of some of the American data centers, and they basically look like huge factories from the air, but they've got insane security. So you can't get it. There's basically cameras, motion detectors. You can't get into the data center unless you are pre-authorized to be there, and then there's three-factor authentication to get in. So... Like the guys that are around here, like Rick and things like that, unless they're given special permission to visit, they can't go in. And then even if you go into the data center, you are only authorized to go in to certain areas. So it's not like you can walk around and start pulling racks and things like that. So the security is like people with guns level security on the data center. So it's not like, you know, you just go and jump the fence and get in. They've really... I mean, you know, Bruce Willis could get into it, but your average dude's just not going to walk in the door and start pulling stuff out of the racks. Other questions? And they're all government certified because basically they want governments to go and use this data. So, anybody else? Thank you very much for your time. Please fill out an evaluation.